So, Bill, today on Inside the Black Box, we'll be talking about the Buy Dole Act.
Is that that whole thing about that it's okay that Senator Dole is the oldest living bisexual?
Once again, you are incorrect, Bill. No.
Okay.
It Buy actually refers to Congressman Birch Buy from Indiana, and the bill co-sponsored by, what was it, Bob Dole and Birch Buy, the Buy Dole Act, passed in 1980, I believe, is the thing that allowed universities to profit from government-sponsored research. Any thoughts on that?
All right. Yeah, I think it's a big exciting.
It's a good thing because we work for a university, right?
Yeah.
So finally, we're getting our due, and I guess the title of today's show is Scientific Research, It's Your Money. Next up on Inside the Black Box here on WRAK, science only funnier.
At the American Lung Association, we're fighting for a day when we can all breathe easier. We're fighting for clear skies over every city and healthy lungs throughout the country. We're fighting to keep harmful secondhand smoke out of our public spaces and workplaces. And fighting to free millions of Americans from the addictive grip of tobacco and the devastating effects of lung disease. We're fighting for a day when kids no longer battle airborne poisons in their own homes or the fear of an asthma attack. The American Lung Association isn't just fighting for air, we're fighting for all the things that make it worth breathing, and we can use your help. Join us in the fight. Visit fightingforair.org and read about just a few of the many ways the American Lung Association is fighting to protect the air we breathe, both indoors and out. See what you can do at fightingforair.org.
The library on the radio, I told you it would work.
It does work, but we need a cool theme song.
Hit it. Lost in the Stacks is the one and only research library rock and roll show right here on WREK Atlanta.
Fridays at noon, your hosts Amit and Charlie pick a theme and free associate an hour of music, interviews, and library talk. You'll hear indie rock, pop rock, alt rock, new wave, and the occasional oddity in between interviews with students, faculty, and librarians. Whatever you tune in for, we hope you dig it.
Turn that back up.
Where the silence spreads.
The opinions expressed on Inside the Black Box do not reflect those of WREK Radio or the Georgia Institute of Technology. Welcome to Inside the Black Box, a weekly program on science and technology, or as we like to think of it, science only funnier. I'm Pete Ludovitz, and as always, I'm joined by my ever effervescent co-host, a man who uses heavy gauge bosons to keep the hair gel in his hair, Bill Hunt. You know, I thought, you know, sort of...
Yeah, yeah, that's good, that's good.
A standard model reference would be good for you.
Yeah, that's good.
And how's it feel to be back after, what, a four-week hiatus while they were painting the broadcast tower?
You
that
know,
was exciting.
I fell off that tower twice.
Did you really?
They had us painted.
And were you using your
radio.
Hair gel saturated
well, that's
head?
That's the only thing that saved me. I bounced right on that stuff, yeah.
All right, the title of today's program is Scientific Research, It's Your Money, where we will be exploring the fascinating laugh in the face of death, live on the razor's edge topic of the Buy Dole Act, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. Senator Dole didn't just used to do Viagra commercials. He actually put forth some very useful, legislation?
Yes.
That's the word I'm looking for.
Yeah, I think so.
And the Buy Dole Act is something that actually allowed universities to benefit from government-sponsored research, right?
Right.
Seems maybe it's a good thing, right, that we actually got commercialized.
It is.
Maybe
very
it's not
so.
Because we're paying for it. Why should the universities get it? Why doesn't the government get it? That's a debate we're going to have. So calm down.
You get right. I can calm down.
That puzzled look on your face.
Okay. I'm not puzzled. I'm not puzzled.
And to discuss this fascinating live on the razor's edge, laugh in the face of death topic today is Nigam Acharya. Do I pronounce that right? Acharya?
Yes.
Who is, no, I'm not laughing at what he does. He is a lawyer with Barnes & Thornburg Limited Liability Partners. Is that correct? The Atlanta office?
That's correct.
Right here? I guess you focus on intellectual property law, right?
That's correct.
So this is, in fact, quite relevant. You received your Juris Doctorate. That's the law degree, for those of you that are geeks like Bill and I, from Emory University School of Law, and a BS with, from the University of Wisconsin-Madison in political science, biochemistry, and molecular biology. What were you thinking on that one?
It's a good combination to go to law school.
Okay, so this is not the product of heavy drinking. You actually thought, I might want to do intellectual?
No.
Is that really a good combination to go to law school with?
Not really.
Oh, okay. So he's starting with the jokes already. I'm sure he'll be much more serious when he talks about...
Yeah, if you're thinking about a career choice at home, young people, probably don't want to get the political biochemistry. What else was in there?
Biochemistry.
And modern advance. Something in there.
Right, and then you actually did your research experience as a student included work in biophysical chemistry, in which you studied the thermodynamic parameters of protein-nucleic acid interactions.
Oh, yeah.
See, Bill and I are excited about
that
stuff.
That's good stuff.
But in general, maybe not. So we actually have a lawyer who's a nerd. I mean, do you have to sit at a separate table at the law review meetings or
something? I'm sure.
When you're that way?
All we know is that when he gets that complimentary inside the black box pocket protector, he's going to put it to good use.
Yeah, I just wear it every day. Yeah.
Okay, and if that weren't bad enough, as a practicing lawyer working here in Atlanta, you are also continuing your work at a master's degree in chemistry here at Georgia Tech.
Yep, and I'm even this summer in a research facility in Dr. France's lab.
Oh, wow. So that's cool. So how does that work? Are you a cool nerd or a nerdy lawyer?
I think combination of both.
Okay, I think I'd go with cool nerd. I like the use of cool, maybe. I don't know. All I know is every once in a while I see you around the campus and you've got your lawyer clothes on. Yeah. It sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, he's wearing that Brooks Brothers suit today. You know, that's pretty impressive.
Walking amidst a bunch of people in Hawaiian shirts. All right, before we get to, like I said, that fascinating world of the Bayh-Dole, because legislation, always exciting. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't you agree, Bill?
Yeah, well, this one, you know, it is pretty amazing. If you think about it in science, if you've done something, or engineering, if you've done something that bears your name, like the Clark Parks McClellan algorithm, Jim McClellan in our department, or you know, the Dirac delta function, that really is a level of significance that you've got to let. And I think there are very few pieces of legislation that the name is attached with the individual and we actually remember it. And this is one
of
those.
Because they always have the sponsors in the bill, but we just often don't remember.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But I mean, this is a significant piece of legislation.
All right. Before we get to that significant piece of legislation, let's begin the program with
Science in the News.
And today's Science in the News comes from the June 25th issue, 2010, of Drug Week, one of Bill's favorite magazines. Not to be confused with High Times, Bill. Totally different demographic they're going after there. This is work that I first saw information on way back in the early 90s. I didn't realize this. But what got my attention as I was reading, the University of Illinois Liberal Arts and Science Alumni Newsletter or something?
Okay.
And they had something about a contribution that University of Illinois research had made to this. The fact that now we think that H. pylori, and this story has to deal with scientists at the University of South Australia, target Helicobacter pylori. In Australia, they were one of the first groups to look at this as causing gastritis and peptic ulcers, right? Mm-hmm. And it changed the face of science because we thought it was excess acid. It's crazy Australian believed.
What is H. pylori?
H. pylori, Helicobacter pylori, right? This is a bacteria that can live in your stomach.
Okay.
Right, and let's face it. There aren't many things that can live in your stomach.
Does it pay rent?
Not that I know of, actually. Okay. When you get it, it has a pretty strong immune response, but it's very persistent. It just stays there.
Yeah.
So the investigation of this has changed the way we treat ulcers. Now you go in, you complain of, you know, reflux or issues like that. Mm-hmm. First thing they do is test you for H. pylori. Then they give you this series of antibiotics to kill it. And it takes a pretty long series to kill it. Mm-hmm. But now what they're saying is that H. pylori may actually produce enzymes that contribute to gastric cancer.
Really?
And ironically, the reason I was thinking about this is I did a comedy benefit for cancer survivors in Decatur.
Wow.
And
really?
It's hard to write cancer jokes. You know, it's depressing. I don't know. So I was thinking, you know, well, here's the new stuff.
I think they got a better sense of humor than you think. But go ahead.
But the point is, I think what this article points out is that we have changed the way we look at cancer, right? 40 years ago, cancer was this mysterious thing where cells just went haywire. Now we realize that bacteria can produce enzymes that may form a cascade kind of reaction that leads to cancer. We already know that viruses can do that. So look at the human papillomavirus. And we now understand, based on that virus thing, there's such a thing as a vaccine for cancer. Either you vaccinate against H. pylori, or there are these immature T lymphocytes that reside under your skin called Langerhans cells that now you can stimulate those. So there are people working on protocols to do that. So we complain all the time that engineers and scientists don't do much, right? Because we don't see the efforts. We may not be seeing the efforts of wiping out cancer, but the fundamental picture of cancer, the understanding, is improving significantly. So one day we'll be able to cure cancer and hopefully keep the ketchup bottle from making that sound, you know.
I don't think that'll ever happen.
That'll be the, and if you get your name attached to that, you know.
Yeah, you're the guy that invented the... used at diners all over the world. That's what I'm going for. That kind of immortality is what I embrace.
All right. I was just trying to illustrate that.
Thank you.
All right. Before we start talking about, like I said, fascinating legislation to buy, are we just implicitly making fun of legislation?
No. It's really an important piece of legislation. It really is.
Before we start that, if you are listening to us live noon to one, give us a call here at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number is 404-894-2468. If you've got a question for Nigam about the Bayh-Dole Act or spending of federal money research.
And you said if they're listening live, if you're listening to us dead, I would say call 911.
Very good, Bill.
Yeah, thanks.
That's the kind of sharp mind I've come to expect from you. All right, so Nigam,
stayed up all
first
night,
question, though. Boxer or briefs? No, just kidding. First question. So the Bayh-Dole Act, what exactly is it?
Well, it's an act that just turned 30 as of this year.
And it's 1980, you're right.
Yeah, and it's basically allows universities and smaller companies to start profiting and really take ownership of the federally sponsored inventions. And it's, I think, the biggest reason that a lot of new technology from the universities has actually made it to the marketplace. And I think that that's the biggest benefit of this Bayh-Dole Act.
So what was before Bayh-Dole? What was the landscape with regard to this?
Prior to Bayh-Dole, pretty much the federal government owned all of the inventions that the universities were working
on. So things went unpatented, or what would?
Well, they were patented; they just weren't exploited, right?
Yeah, and the federal government owned them.
Well, but hold on. I mean, they probably wouldn't patent it if there was a case of Richard White at Berkeley in 1968 or whatever, invented the interdigital transducer that was used on surface acoustic wave devices. Tons and tons and tons of devices, but they decided not to patent it. Berkeley did. They didn't even put the money into it, so he got like a nothing. Other than notoriety, nothing off that. Now, were people patenting things less back then? Were universities patenting things less back in that time
period? I think the universities were patenting. Certainly they were doing it less. But I think the patent system in general has benefited from the Bayh-Dole Act in that the universities have started really taking their technology forward, and it's led to other companies actually seeing this material and developing it and ultimately patenting it in some other context.
Right. I think the rules were different. The assignee is always the money guy, right? I mean, so whenever you read a patent, you know, a lot of us have our name as inventor on it, and that and $5 will get you a latte at Starbucks. So you're the inventor, you say, well, I invented this. But the person that can sell the patent, profit from the patent, lease the patent, license the patent to people is the assignee. They're the ones that own it. And in theory, the assignee prior to the Bayh-Dole Act either had to be the federal government or the federal agency as an agent of the federal government to be the assignee or the co-assignee. But I think what happened is after the Bayh-Dole Act, universities probably started patenting a lot more of what they did because they realized they now have the right to sell or license that patent to someone else and actually get benefits, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I think you're right.
And I think also the federal government, they benefited too. It was a license. It was a royalty-free license, so they could use the technology as they saw fit.
Right, right. So if they need it, you know, for military stuff and things like that, they could use it. And I guess the issue is, that makes sense, but think about it. You know, all the the NSF-sponsored stuff and NIH-sponsored stuff. And those of us that are younger than Bill take this for granted. But before World War II...
Is there anybody younger than me? I don't think so.
Before World War II, we didn't do this. We didn't have all this sponsored research, right? Universities spent a lot of their time actually teaching people. And I know Trent's looking at me like, what? Universities taught people? You knock them over with a stick, right?
Tell us, Dad. Tell us the story of long ago.
No, but then the indirect benefit was that university professor salaries went up because you were actually bringing in overhead with this sort of stuff.
Well, but let me sort of do a sideways segue here. It doesn't just apply to universities. It's any government-funded research for a company.
Yeah,
so we're at a university, so we're talking. But if you have a small company and you get government funding to do something, you can commercialize it as well. So it's not just universities. So.
Mm-hmm.
But, why did it... So it was. So what's the year 30 years ago? It would be
1980.
Okay. So what was the impetus? I mean, were there many years of people debating this, or did Bayh & Dole sitting in some smoky...
Smoke-filled room.
Gin bar with bathtub gin there on Capitol Hill decide...
Okay, so you have Bob Dole as a alcoholic bisexual already.
With
and,
one,
you know, we're
one,
barely
one
in
One-armed alcoholic bisexual. So, but
not, at least he's a veteran.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but... I mean, was there, because usually, you know, historically, there's a lot of, well, many times, there's years and years and years of debate that leads up to a legislation like this. Was there a long period where people going, should we do this? Should we not do this? And
so it basically was, and I can't give you a detailed study because I've heard the number out there, and the only number I've actually seen written down was in Wikipedia. I could not find an associated study with it. But the thinking was that the government did sort of a survey and realized that most of what they funded was not being commercialized.
Yeah.
That the number floating around there was about 5% of this stuff actually went to something.
Okay.
And, of course, it's in the government best interest to take technology and use it for two things. One, if it's got a military application... They can do that, right? And the other one is if it's not a military application, then they want somebody in the United States to make money off of it, so they stimulate the economy. Isn't stimulating the economy the favorite pastime of all politicians now? That's all they
want to
talk about.
It should be the favorite pastime. Unfortunately, I think some of them do something else.
sit in gin bars and drink and smoke.
Yeah.
So that was the motivation. And I guess that is how they answer all the people that immediately would say, what? You're giving away our stuff? I mean, my tax dollars paid for this. Mm-hmm. Why should a university, or even worse, a company make money off that stuff?
I guess you don't know so I don't remember, not that I would have been paying attention.
He's
to
a lawyer. You're
like
the historian,
this.
Monkey boy.
But... I don't recall, which only means, you know, it's kind of like being interrogated by the Congress for being Attorney General under, George Bush, that I do not recall. So I do not recall there being a huge debate about this leading up to it. It wasn't like health care where it gripped the nation.
I don't think there was.
So I think it was just sort of a good idea that slipped in there and passed, and like you say, 30 years later, the Supreme Court hadn't struck it down yet, although they may be planning on doing that pretty soon.
Stimulate the economy.
Yeah.
The current court would love this.
Yeah. Well, they also love striking down Chicago gun laws, but that's different story. So.
Yeah, that's a different...
I'm from Chicago. I'm a little worried to go back. I'm going to Chicago in the fall. I'm not so sure I actually want to be there.
Yeah.
But I will say this, you know, we pick on legislatures and things like that. And the whole process, right? C-SPAN has never been the funniest show on the planet until this week. Have you been watching the Elena Kagan things?
What's going on?
I don't know what these guys are thinking. I mean, it's a total waste of time, but the entertainment value is great. Somebody asked the Supreme Court nominee with regard to that Christmas bomber, the guy that tried to light his shoes on fire a few years back.
Yeah.
He goes, now, Ms. Kagan, where were you on Christmas, whatever year that was? And she goes... Well, what? Considering I'm Jewish, I was probably in a Chinese restaurant. That was the best joke I heard all week, and it was on C-SPAN, man. She really answered that.
That's good.
They've been replaying that joke on radio.
Yeah. She's got good writers. Yeah,
she's very good. Yeah, so yeah. I am for her just to have somebody funny on the Supreme Court.
Absolutely.
It's all about diversity.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. All right, so we sort of sidetracked you. From a legal standpoint, what else do we need to know? Are there things we need to know about this Bayh-Dole Act that you wanted to talk about, and then we cut you off? Or...
Well, I think the big thing is that it allows these universities to commercialize their industry. And for the first time, it not only gave us patent lawyers a lot of things to do.
Oh, so it's good for you guys, too?
Oh, yeah.
We have a lot more business. Okay.
Yeah, I represent two universities and a for-profit university, so
okay. It's
fairly good. But I think the more important thing is these inventions are turning into real products in the marketplace. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where the benefit is. I think it has less of a legal framework than essentially a policy standpoint. We've mm-hmm. made the policy decision that we want universities to commercialize their inventions, and we want the public to benefit from it.
And I would think even the fact that, you know, the government, the military can still get a license of it does not really hurt anyone. So for example, I think what a lot of people think is you get one patent and boom, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
There are improvement patents, modification patents. And I think I've told this story before. I attended a lecture when I was a graduate student. It was in a course taught by was Rob Rhines, who founded the Franklin Pierce Law Center, which is a well-known intellectual property school. And he said, this is the guy who invented power steering. He never made a dime off the initial patent. In fact, he gave it to the United States government for a dollar. And why? When you collect that dollar, there's a reason you don't give it away for free. You collect isn't there some legal precedent?
I think it's really old British law.
Oh, okay. That, you know,
really?
It establishes
some
kind of thing.
Anymore.
Okay. So he gave it to the United States government for a buck during mm-hmm. World War II because the one thing that patent was useful for is tanks.
Mm-hmm.
Although many, many Cadillacs and Buicks were the size of tanks back
right.
then.
Yeah.
But,
and still are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, what was the Escalade or something? This is the one I can't see over when I park my car.
The Monte Carlo I had in the 80s was very much like that.
I think that says a lot about your personality.
I know,
you dropped
yeah. Actually, somebody rear-ended me once. This was in a car.
Okay, that's good.
I had to clear that up. And nothing happened to my car. The front of his Toyota was just cracked like an eggshell. So, but anyway, that was a tank.
But yeah, so this guy, he made all his money off the improvement patents when it was eventually applied to cars and things like that. And I think he did fairly well.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have that kind of civic responsibility anymore. I don't know.
Well, I think we do. We
do
just
we?
It
I
doesn't
just,
get.
I don't see it. Not by people waving their middle finger at me in traffic.
Well, that's just you, but and the way you drive. But I mean, that's we do have some of that. It's certainly not what's popularized, and maybe it's not predominant. Certainly, in World War II, you did have people were going to do whatever it was that they could do to help out, and that was an example. So.
All right. All right, well, let's take a quick break. But when we come back, we'll continue talking about the Bayh-Dole Act with our guest, Nigam. And if you've got a question or comment about either the Bayh-Dole Act or about, you know, federal expenditures for research and now the fact that both companies and universities can benefit from that, give us a call here if you're listening live noon to 1 at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468. We'll be right back after this break.
This message is brought to you by the New Forces Radio Hour.
I remember the days when things were real bad for me. It was right after my accident, when I lost my hand. It seemed like I was all alone, with nobody to help me. You know, I almost gave up all my hopes and dreams. But then something inside me kept telling me, way down inside me, over and over again, to keep going on, yeah, on.
All day!
Tuesdays from 11 to midnight on 91.1 FM.
Things are better for me now, because I found that I love music. So I learned to play the drums and got myself a band. And now we're starting to make it.
when every moment matters and a life is saved, when someone gives blood, when a hand reaches out, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Down the street, across the country, around the world, you help save the day. Every day. Your support truly matters. You can help today. Visit redcross.org.
Stonehenge, the finest classic rock radio on earth. Every Friday from 8 p.m. till midnight. Stonehenge begins with the classic rock album of the week, played in its entirety. Then we kick off the weekend in style with more than 3 hours of the finest rock music in the universe. Stonehenge, classic rock you don't hear on the radio. Every Friday from 8 p.m. till midnight on WREK Atlanta.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box, where our guest Nigam Acharya from Barnes and Thornburg. Oh, that's impressive sounding. Barnes and Thornburg.
I think so.
It's like very aggressive. Thornburg. Okay. It's talking to us about the Bayh-Dole Act, the act that granted, I guess, benefits to universities and companies that gain the information from government-sponsored research. Mm-hmm. So you guys are paying for this, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is this a sore spot with the average American? I mean, we're the beneficiaries of this, right? Bill and I get this money.
Yeah.
Nigam's firm makes money by helping us capitalize it. I mean, people ticked off about that?
I mean,
do they think we're spending too much money?
I've never heard anybody... complain about the I've never heard anybody complain about it, put it that way. They complain about many other things, like not fixing the highways or something like that, but I've never heard anybody complain about that the government would assist people in creating IP.
Because it was explained best to me by Gary Paline, who was with the National Science Foundation a number of years ago. He said the average NSF grant is the tax burden of 10 family households. So he's not, look, if you're complaining about the way we review things, how it's not perfect, yada, 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 stand in the street corner and try to convince 10 heads of household to give you their entire tax contribution, you know, for the next 2-3 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. That's got to be a tough sell. So I'm going to go with the other one.
Yeah.
So.
What, you think they are upset?
No, I think it's going to be tough to convince them of that. So I'm not going to complain about the National Science Foundation when they send me rejection letters anymore. That's all I'm saying. It's not a perfect system. But
you just complained about
it's not bad.
Uh-huh.
All right, well, I'm not complaining. Starting now.
I'm not complaining
anymore. So now, Nigam, I didn't know that. You said you guys represent universities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I personally am representing two universities and a for-profit university.
Oh, okay.
Well, no, what do you mean for-profit?
A lot of these universities are not for profit, especially the state ones. Georgia Tech is not for profit.
We are not for profit, ladies and gentlemen.
Really? No kidding.
Georgia State is not
for
profit.
Tell that to the parking office.
Well, I think they're for
the
profit.
The parking office is for
they're
profit.
For
I think
profit.
Negative.
Absolutely.
They're for profit. You know, $500. You know, it was free when I got here, but let's not get into that.
This was back in what?
That's
a long
time ago.
87. 87 was free.
You mean we had free parking here at one time?
We did. Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Anyway.
Okay.
That's way off the Bayh-Dole Act. Yeah.
All right, so
I'm not even sure Bob Dole drives anymore, so I think that's way off topic, but go ahead.
Bart, you were talking about for-profit universities.
86 years old. Yeah, what do you mean?
Some of the other universities are for-profit. They're actually running the institute to pay shareholders.
Name one.
University of Phoenix.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, you guys don't represent University of Phoenix.
No.
Okay, so then we can talk about University of Phoenix, because we don't want to get you in trouble. Let me just say this. This is a totally different topic that we should tackle one of these days. Mm-hmm. And the guy that kind of invented this was a guy that invented something called Life College here, right here in Atlanta.
Right.
I think it's up in Marietta, actually. Mm-hmm. It was one of the first for-profit universities. It was a chiropractic school.
Right.
Then it expanded to a full university. Mm-hmm. It had one of the highest default rates for federal student loans of any place in the country.
Amen.
And I believe they might have been cut off. Mm-hmm. This is a real problem. Mm-hmm. I don't think, in principle, a for-profit university is a bad thing. I think that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
But what many people are doing is they're trying to get as many students as possible. They might succeed. They might not succeed.
Right.
Let me say this. There are some for-profit universities that I think do a very, very good job.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But others, they get a whole bunch of people in to take courses. that they're not prepared for. Either they flunk out or they get the degree, and the degree, although accredited by some standards, mm-hmm. isn't really enough to get them into a job. Mm-hmm. They don't have a job, or they don't make it through school, and they can't pay back that loan, they default on that loan. Mm-hmm. And then you and I are paying mm-hmm. the bill. Even right. worse, that's the one thing you can't get wiped out when you go to bankruptcy court. So nope. they will hound you forever.
For that student loan.
It's a horribly vicious cycle. And Frontline did a really good piece mm-hmm. called University Inc. that if you're interested in this, you'd look at. Mm-hmm. We should actually talk about this. Mm-hmm. This one of these
okay.
days.
Okay, but how about not today?
Oh, not today. So, okay. All right, I'm yeah. coming back. Rein me in.
Right. Yeah, pulling back. Come on. Come back to the back from the edge.
Well, do you think the for-profit universities are more aggressive in trying to...
Well, I think they don't have the infrastructure yet to develop, okay. to make use of this Bayh-Dole Act. Okay. I think that's the big thing, is once they start doing federally sponsored research, I think we may actually see a place where patenting will happen in the for-profit institutes.
Okay, okay, that makes sense.
Because we got small companies doing it. I don't think it's any different from anything else.
Right. I mean, would you say that the big state universities, the not-for-profit universities, are... They're would you use the word aggressive... in pursuing this stuff?
I think they're fair about it. I think they're really, okay. they're consciously thinking what's going to turn into something, and they're patenting it.
Okay.
I don't think they're just blowing legal fees and saying,
okay.
you know what, let's see if we can keep patent lawyers in town fully employed. Oh,
okay. But I think we're at least excited about it. And think mm-hmm. about it, right? If you're not in the academic field, you may not have observed this, but over the last 25 years or so, schools like MIT really started this intellectual property
Absolutely.
Boom. Everyone's copying them, and other major universities mm-hmm. do. We do it. We have a whole mm-hmm. division of people that mm-hmm. just is intellectual property. And in fact, all they do is organize it and turn it over to people like you.
Absolutely. And 30% yeah. of the NASDAQ companies have some roots in this Bayh-Dole Act or university
oh, really?
Research.
Oh, wow. That's now, that's impressive. That's I did not know.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
Wow, so 30% of the NASDAQ came out of some technology that from, may from have been paid for by the federal government.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
So there it is, ladies and gentlemen. The biggest stimulus to this economy, probably over the last three decades, mm-hmm. was the Bayh-Dole Act.
Well,
absolutely.
And, wow. you know, usually, like at Georgia Tech anyway, it's set up such that the inventors can go out and start a company related to the technology. So you get the people that have had the idea, have the fire to commercialize it, not having any roadblocks from the federal government, at least, in commercializing the technology. So I think it's one of these kind of, for most people, under the radar things that does stimulate the economy.
Yeah, so. And I also think when it was all held as federal... essentially federal property rights, it was probably difficult to license from a central institute. Now we have more delocalized control of mm-hmm. it, and it's probably just easier to find out who actually owns it mm-hmm. and how do you get hold of it
right.
once you want it.
So you mentioned before, I mean, it's not only for-profit universities, but it's for-profit companies. Right?
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, so, and again, I will implore any of our listeners that have a thought on this, not just the details of the Bayh-Dole Act, mm-hmm. but is this a good thing? I mean, a lot of people at mm-hmm. first, and even now, are not happy about the fact that federal government funds are being used to kind of start companies. And if you've got a strong opinion about that, give us a call if you're listening live, noon to 1 on Wednesdays at 404-894-2468.
You know, I've never...
Bill has a strong opinion.
Well, I mean, I've never really heard anybody voice that opinion. I've heard people
oh, okay.
complain about actual welfare or mm-hmm. giving lots of money. Basically, planter, you know, somebody owns 100,000 acres of land and you're paying them not to plant that land and they've already got... more money than God.
So oh, okay, so like
I've heard complaints about that.
Farm subsidies.
Yeah, I've heard right. complaints about that. I've never heard complaints about this. The other thing that this sort of did, and I'm blanking on when the court decision was against Bell Telephone that ended up in the slow demise of Bell Labs, but at that time, you know, it was hard to go up against a company like Bell Labs because they had such a large collection of patents and they had the revenue stream from the telephone revenue so they could patent stuff and all that. But if you were just a small company out there and you couldn't use federally funded money, it was really hard to get in that game, I would suspect, that you'd have to pay the legal fees, and with the way this guy dresses here, I mean, I know that that ain't cheap, you know. So,
but he's wearing a green T-shirt just for our listening audience. Yeah. You're good though. I believed you.
You believe
I believed
me?
You.
Yeah, I'm glad.
But I'm here. So.
That's good. Yeah. Well, it looks like an expensive T-shirt, but I don't think it's one he got given to him by Jahim at NTA or whatever that is. But yeah, close enough. But I mean, I think it. You know, somewhat leveled the playing field in terms of getting enough money to get going with a business, with an invention idea. Whereas if you had to go up against Motorola, some of the big companies, you'd be hard-pressed to get the money to do the research
It's the research. The money is for the research. It's not for the patenting. In fact, last time Nathan was on the program, which you may or may not remember, I don't know if you were here. Yeah, you were here. He points out that, I mean, that's not the big expense. I mean, it's going to cost you thousands of dollars to get this thing through court. But compared to hundreds of thousands of dollars to develop an initial idea, that's the easy part. And the nice thing is we do have the infrastructure. Our office will do the preliminary legwork for free. And if they think patenting it may produce them, and may, it's not a high standard, because I've patented my stuff before, they will, you know, and I'm no rocket scientist.
That was my joke.
But I'm the low bar.
It's not my stuff,
But they'll do that for you. You know, they'll spend several thousand dollars getting that process initiated.
No, but I mean, I would, again, this is just off the cuff historian stuff, but this did come about right at, I think it was 80 or 81 when that case was against, decided against the telephone company.
It's a long time ago.
You're not interested in anything before your birth. is that how this rolls? But, you know, but I mean, I think that this, I don't know that that was a stimulus for it, but it certainly gave greater possibilities to somebody that didn't have that kind of capital that the telephone company used to have to develop technology. They could do that with the money from the federal government.
Okay, but if you think about it, that's all we do. That's all we do is kind of develop technology.
That's what we do, yeah.
And the point is, we develop it at the fundamental level, and then we kind of like publish and go, there it is, you know. But now I think a lot of companies will take it, or a lot of universities, put an initial patent in, then publish the research after that, and then just sort of see what happens. And I think it's smart for universities. I don't think we want to develop this stuff. I think we want to license it. We want to lease it to people. We want to work with people. And, you know, so we're not giving it away anymore, but we're still getting it out there so people can do it. And you're absolutely right. Some of them are spinoff companies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, that this is a sort of a different issue. But, yeah, you can – I mean, another – this may be an entirely different show, but a lot of people think, well, I've got a patent. Now I've got something. You've got a piece of paper.
Yeah, that and $5 will get you a lot.
You
know,
even if you're the assignee, you've sort of got nothing. You've got bits and pieces, and the further along you are in terms of a prototype or something like that, the more value that particular invention has. But, yeah, I think at a university we shouldn't be certainly putting graduate students through basically what's a corporate engineering task as opposed to the research.
They should do fundamentally new stuff.
Yeah, I think that's what you were kind of hinting at, that we don't develop it in terms of we do come up with the ideas and prove it to some extent and all that, but we're not going to be making a box and a thousand of these boxes. We're not going to be making a product because it's not really what you should be doing at a university.
Right. But once again, if you've got a strong opinion about the allocation of the results of federally funded research, you know, universities, for-profit universities,
or
corporations.
If you don't care and you just like to call us up and tell us that you really don't care.
And if you're listening live Wednesday, noon to 1, give us a call at 404-894-2468. Once again, that number, 404-894-2468.
All right,
Nigam, just jump in here. Our guest has not talked at all.
I know.
What's that?
Are we going to have a time
Where's
travel?
Where's that funny guy that I hang out with here? Yeah. I did explicitly say I want the funny guy here. Are there any funny, embarrassing stories about the Bayh-Dole Act? Any interesting legislation? Any interesting court precedents? Has this really gone to court much?
No, it has not.
So people like this law.
Yeah, this is actually a law that no one seems to have too many problems
with. All right, so Rhett, I'm looking for controversy where
I was looking for it, too.
There is none. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Well, that's interesting because you know, again, I'm going to hammering on the Supreme Court, but yeah, there's
good
not...
segue there. How do we get to the Supreme Court?
Well, how much you asked about the challenge? None. Not enough. Not enough. But no, I mean, you're looking at their challenges to the Bayh-Dole Act that has to percolate through the courts in 30 years. If somebody said, you know what, this just isn't right, something would have percolated up and you eventually get to the point where it gets to the Supreme Court. You got none of that. Says that everybody goes, yeah, this is a good thing. And you were making some comments that were interesting that it's actually not a law in the sense that a lot of us tend to think of laws like don't kill your insurance salesman or something like that.
Yeah, even if you want to.
And you live in Texas, don't do it. That's a law. But this is not sort of, would you say, it's not restricting? I mean, no, it's a policy kind of thing, which is an interesting kind of law.
Yeah, it's a policy framework in which essentially is transferring rights to the inventions through this law. And I think the argument really just come over what's the effective way to do it. Mm-hmm. And some people say that the universities are not as effective as they should be. Maybe the university shouldn't have rights. It should rest all in the inventors. That's some people have taken that position.
Let me just say, woohoo, that would be good.
Yeah, I know people like you guys will all be excited about that.
Well, but you know,
because the university does invent things, professors do. Yeah. And graduate students and undergraduate students.
Yeah. Yeah, we're
staff and
we're the bomb, man. We're, you know, we're the what's going on. But no, I mean the fact of the matter is though that it's a better deal than working for a company in the sense that we get some percentage.
Get the summer off.
We get some percentage. Yeah. Again with the humor. Basically we get a percentage of the royalties,
yeah, we do get a
even though tech pays for the yeah. legal fees, whereas if you had to take this out on your own and pay the legal fees, you probably wouldn't do it. You know, you wouldn't necessarily go get the patent.
Right. I mean, we get a relatively small cut, but the good news is, and I'm thinking about this with some technology I'm working on right now, mm-hmm. is, you know, sell it to a company, give it to a company, whatever they're going to do, because they can always hire you as a consultant. Because mm-hmm. We are not like the Bill Gates who need to make billions and billions. Mm-hmm. I'd be lucky just to
yourself,
offset the fact that we haven't had a decent raise in a few years and things like that.
If anybody would like to call up and give us some money, it's 404-894-2468. We can't ask. Oh, I'm sorry. That was illegal, wasn't it? We can't ask for donations.
He's just joking.
Yeah, I'm just
joking. He's got like a stain on his shirt. I might give you $15 to go to Walmart and get a better shirt. That's all I'm saying.
I didn't get this at Walmart.
All right. But in any case, I think Nigam made the interesting point that, so you consider this a policy change, really. I mean, it's a law, but it's a policy change.
Yeah, it's more of a framework where we've started to shift essentially the way mm-hmm. we look at inventions at the university.
Right.
And that's where the follow-up is. Some people do think that the rights should all rest in the inventors since they will be the ones that go out there with enough of a financial incentive.
Right. And supposedly after the 50s, there were approximately 26 different agencies that you had to go through if you wanted to develop intellectual property from a government-sponsored thing. So I think you're right in saying it is
Excuse
a policy
me?
Change. 26 policies, right?
26 organizations?
Or sorry, 26 different agency policies. Not agencies, but policies from the different agencies.
Yeah, see, now that critiques legal phase. Maybe we shouldn't have passed this thing.
Okay, so that wasn't necessarily good for you. All right, so let's talk about all these 26 agencies when we get back from this break. We'll be right back on Inside the Black Box.
Okay.
Kick out the jams with Psych Out every Wednesday evening from 11 to midnight here on 91.1 FM. We'll bring you the trippiest of heavy psych, the freakiest of freak folk, and the most burned out acid rock you've heard in your lifetime. We play psychedelic music from the 60s through the present, exploring the wide variety of themes and subgenres that have emerged over the past half century. So if you're ready to rock out, listen to Psych Out, Wednesdays at 11 p.m., right here on 91.1 FM, WREK Atlanta.
Mom, Dad, I'm in eighth grade now. That means those years of peer pressure are way behind me. From here on out, it's all about good grades and living up to your totally realistic expectations. Alcohol is probably the last thing on my mind. Like you said, I'm too young to drink. When I'm with my friends, all we talk about are current events and boy bands. We're definitely not curious about what alcohol tastes like or why the older kids drink. And do I notice when you have a drink at dinner? Of course not. Just like I haven't noticed where you keep the alcohol. Oh, and if the opportunity arises to talk to me about drinking, you should definitely continue to avoid it. And if you do bring it up, just remind me that I'm too young. That'll probably do the trick.
Real kids are curious about alcohol. 40% try it by the 8th grade. Start a real conversation at underagedrinking.samhsa.gov. Talk early, talk often, get others involved. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Inside the Black Box. We've got a caller, Bert from Atlantis.
Atlanta.
I know.
Bert, you're on the air.
Welcome to the program.
I thought I was going to get wet. I just wanted to express an opinion that I think that this act was very much a positive thing. I think that anything to stimulate the application of technology coming out of research is a great thing. And my guess is that this probably reduces the amount of red tape that is associated with getting an invention from research to application in the real world.
And 26 agency policies would agree with you.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, say again?
26 agency policies is what they had to deal with before this happened.
Yeah, so you're
absolutely
right. Did cut through the red tape, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a...
And that was probably for a simple invention.
Yeah.
So I also have a question. My question is this. I'm an investor by trade, and I have been interested in finding sources of technology that is in the areas that I'm active in that might be ready for exploitation. Is there a clearinghouse that that the schools publish into describing research that might be ready for implementation?
Well, I would say the answer to this question is yes and no. There is the Advanced Technology Development Center at Georgia Tech, and rather than give you people's names and phone numbers out over the and their cell phones,
ATDC Atlanta, you'll find out.
Yeah, and they can tell you start to make some connections, and the Office of Technology Licensing at Georgia Tech. Again, OTC.
OTL.
gotech.edu. They can start to give you an idea, but I don't think there's if there's a ready-made web page that goes, you type in energy and it goes, here's all the patents related to energy. I don't know about it, which only means that I have no knowledge of this. But yeah, there certainly are people that you can talk to at those two different organizations that can. You know, because I think you're right on there in terms of being an investor, that you want to invest something you have a passion for and know something about what's coming up. And so certainly the things coming out of Georgia Tech, you could get access to beginning to get that information through those two organizations. So the Office of Technology Licensing and the Advanced Technology Development Center.
And I would also add something to that, and that you can contact these professors by email, or you know, just find out what they're doing, and if they're on the cusp of patenting something, they can go to their tech transfer office.
Well, but the reality is that if we just get emails from Bert from Atlantis, it's probably
just going to ignore it.
We're probably going to ignore it. But if you go through the proper channels, are really ATDC and the Office of Technology Licensing to get an idea, so that when you do approach whoever, they've already started a startup company or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with you, Bert, or being from Atlantis,
Bert.
Either.
I agree with Nigma on this one.
Really?
Okay. I think it's your role as professor.
So, but what you said, what Bill said is right. Every single major university that does research has several offices. And so they all have an incubator. Ours is called the Atlanta Technology Development Corporation, where they start companies. They all have an Office of Technology Licensing. And the Office of Technology Licensing is there when you're ready to go in for a specific talk. And trust me, we do answer these emails. I mean, I actually had an email on just an invention disclosure that we wrote. So before it's even a patent, you can come in and under a brief non-disclosure agreement, talk to the, we'll talk to you about this invention and you want to see if you want to invest in it or something like that. Probably when it's actually patented already, believe it or not, the communications office, which every university has, they will have already spewed that out over the newsletter and the media. To believe it or not, a Google search might actually give you some ideas, and then you can hone in at the Office of Technology Licensing and then actually talk to the faculty, because we'd love to sell it.
Well, I was just talking about a matter of efficiency. I mean, if he just starts, you know, going through the chemical and biomolecular engineering faculty listing and starts calling people up.
No, that's not the way.
You want to see anything interesting you're doing?
Who has a disclosure or a patent or a patent pending?
Or you could go to the USPTO.gov and check what patents have issued. It's 18 months behind because patent applications get published 18 months from the filing date. But if you do a search and you look up the assignee Georgia Tech, you can kind of find out what people are doing in the departments, and then
is there any listing from the government side about what research is being funded? Can you sort it that way?
Oh yeah, if you just want the research that's funded, and granted, this is before anyone gets to the patent thing. If you go to the National Science Foundation and put in any keyword whatsoever, you'll get a lot of them that are solicitations. But what the government does, they don't put the full grant and everything down there, but they will put the person that got the grant and what they're studying. They'll usually have a title and often a summary, and that's true for the National Science Foundation, the National Institutes of Health. I would find it hard to believe if we certain DOE and DOD things might actually be up on the web as well. So look on the internet.
And I'll take a different opinion that I think there was a lot of stuff going on at Georgia Tech, pretty much anything in any field, ATDC and Office of Technology Licensing will get you there faster than just sort of looking on the U.S. Army's webpage.
But NSF is pretty good for this.
Yeah, but anyway.
We use it to figure out what they funded in the past.
Pete and I have a difference of opinion. He's wearing a pocket protector with a yellow highlighter in it. I'm not.
So, I'm just jealous you still got your hair.
Yeah.
All right, but that was a great question.
Yeah, great question.
Thanks so much, Bert.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you.
All right. Oh, a caller from Atlantis. Wow.
Yeah. He thought that was funny.
Yeah.
I didn't. But,
you didn't.
But
I know,
did.
Yeah.
So.
You really don't.
But so he's an investor, though. I think he's more interested in it when it's further down the road than I think your suggestion
of
ATDC.
It depends.
No, it completely depends.
If it's an angel investor or like a seed person or, I mean, if they're a VC person.
Oh,
like,
yeah. See, I would assume you guys want to talk to him.
A first stage
There's stage for investment in all phases of the process.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, my point was just that you can start trying to look.
Yeah.
It's a needle in a haystack when you're just going to sit there and Google out because you don't know what's close, what's not close.
I mean, what's
been abandoned almost.
From my experience, working with a bunch of startups, it's usually you're going to find way more people that need investment than you actually want to invest in. Yeah. It's not hard to just go find technology people who say, I have this idea, I want some money.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you usually go through. One out of 20 or something like that if they're a VC firm, going through stuff and just making sure to invest it. And then only, one out of 10 of the ones they actually invested in will actually turn into something.
Right, and I'm guessing he's not that first stage capital kind of venture capitalist guy.
Well, no, venture capital is a later stage capital, investing and stuff like that are much earlier.
So angel investing is when you're just two guys around a table.
Angel
investing is
generally between $5,000 and a little over $150,000, and it's usually an investor, one of their first investors, and they actually know a lot about the business and their contacts. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's not just, so give them a little bit of money to get started, and they can point them in the right direction to the people to talk to. VCs are generally a later stage in the few millions of dollars worth, up to 30 or 100 million or whatever.
Okay.
And that's more of they're going to, put the money in and put some people on the board or get a seat on the board and that kind of stuff.
And try
and put you in the direction of getting sold and helping them make money and that kind of stuff.
Well,
right.
All right. So Any other thoughts on the Bayh-Dole Act?
Great act. I mean, are there other, you know, I can't wait for the second act of the Bayh-Dole Act, you know, but that was a play reference there.
If you got to explain the joke, Bill, it's just not
good. Yeah, it's just not very good.
It's not as funny.
I think everyone got it was a play reference. It just wasn't funny.
It's not as funny. I didn't need to go through all that.
I didn't even get that.
Okay. Yeah. I think what you didn't get was that it was supposed to be funny. That's what didn't really come through. But, I mean, are there other, you know, just more generally, is this the crafting of this legislation? Are there other things that have this kind of success that that the Congress has come up with? I mean, you know, I mean, they come out and say, you know, roses are good. You know, let's pass a statement on that, and it has no impact. But this has tremendous impact, and it's not a law telling you what to do or how to do
it. But isn't everything that has impact something that we've kind of agreed on for a long, long time?
Yeah, and this is 30 years.
After World War II, even before this, you know, mm-hmm. so in the 50s and the 60s, supposedly Jerome Wiesner, who was at MIT mm-hmm. for a while, who was an advisor to President John F. Kennedy, mm-hmm. started this process. Eventually, it was your alma mater, University of Wisconsin at Madison, yep. that was one of the first folks that joined, I guess, its institutional patent agreements. And what these guys were doing were lobbying to get stuff supported by the National Science Foundation and Health and Human Services, which runs the NIH, to allow us to get some licensing benefit from that sort of thing. And it was this, this IPA that actually got this. They've been pushing and lobbying this for about 10 years. And then, boom, the Dole Bayh Act mm-hmm. came to be. So,
yeah.
So it only took them, you know, 30 years. And now we've had it for 30 years.
Right.
And no one's really complained.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I was thinking it was more controversial. I would think the average person would be like, what?
No.
But what about with companies, though? They did use the phrase corporate welfare. I've actually worked with companies on projects, you know, big companies that everybody knows that got these big development grants to develop everything from, you know, microelectronics to advanced electronics, things like that. And they felt as though it was corporate welfare. Any thoughts on that?
I don't know who you're talking to. But
talking to you and our listening audience.
Oh, okay. No, I don't think the controversy is there. I think this is one of those where, you know, how can you be against baby puppies? You know, I mean, how can you be against cute puppies?
I'm writing that down.
You know, how can you go against cute puppies? You know, I mean,
think that's part of it.
A political, you know, somebody made this the cornerstone of their campaign that they were going to get rid of the Bayh-Dole, repeal the Bayh-Dole Act, or making like, why? I mean, there's no reason to.
So we're not going to see anything about this in the upcoming elections?
No, I don't think so.
It's a good thing.
All right, we've reached the end of the program, and the segment we'd like to call What Have We Learned? And I think what we've learned is that the Bayh-Dole Act is like baby puppies. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so.
Everybody likes it. They're cute. There's an obvious benefit. You don't even have to clean up after the Bayh-Dole
They actually are. Well, they're more like baby puppies that have been house broke.
Oh, so that's even better.
That's the only downside with the baby puppy is the housebreaking thing. They've been housebroken.
And what we're learning is Pete doesn't mm-hmm. get to pick the topics anymore because I was looking for something controversial.
Yeah,
it's not
you just didn't pick one.
It's good.
Yeah.
And then I think what we've also learned is that could it be that this is this the only case or one of the rare cases where the United States Congress actually enacted a good piece of legislation that benefited companies and citizens
the test of time.
Alike?
It was cross
absolutely.
Party lines.
Well, certainly Bert from Atlantis agrees.
So
that's really good.
Right.
And I guess the point that our guest Nigga made is this is also one of the best stimulations to the economy. So their gamble worked. A lot of this wasn't being commercialized. Of order 5%.
Right.
You got the Bayh-Dole Act, and now 30% of NASDAQ companies are a result from, you know, directly
some
or indirectly
sponsor.
From
absolutely. You know,
those sorts of things.
And I think the only controversy regarding this, and it's too late to sort of get into it now, but some universities don't think that their commercialization efforts have paid off as well as they should have. And that's not really that the act was bad. It was just that they're doing the commercialization the wrong way. But that's
the implementation is always going to be
basically just Nigam's too expensive. So that's basically the controversy. So, yeah. Because he's got to buy
are expensive.
The fancy
T-shirt
clothes,
costs a lot. But still, in the total development cost, the patent part is such a tiny
small
piece
patent,
of the development.
Right.
Wow. All right. All right, well, Nigam, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Despite the fact we had a non-controversial issue, it is good to be back.
Yeah.
And if you've got a question or comment about this program, by all means, send us an email at comments@insidetheblackbox.org. Also, if you've got a suggestion for a future program, that would be
controversial.
Would be good. All right, our chief engineer is Trent Altman. Our theme music is composed and performed by Bill and Mary Hunt. And we are a production, ladies and gentlemen, of the WREK Studios here on the campus of the Georgia Institute of Technology. Please join us next week for Inside the Black Box, Science Only Funnier.